Hey, Jordo?
Go ahead, Merritt.
Yeah, what? Isn't there supposed to be music right now?
Yeah, give me a second.
Okay.
Okay, so it looks like the audio transition matrix burned out.
Uh-huh.
That handles all the musical transitions and also simulates the subway tunnel.
Uh-huh.
We can go ahead with the episode, but you're going to have to do it without music. Is that okay?
Yeah, no, I can do it. I can do the show with that music. That's fine. Yeah.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Any idea when that'll be fixed or?
Well, we have to order parts and wait for those to arrive, and we have to drop the engine out to even get to the transition matrix. So it's going to be next week at the earliest.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Sorry. Good luck.
Hi, and welcome back to the K-Hole. I'm Merritt Kay, and joining me this week is a writer, recovering bad vibes baby, Fanbyte's social manager, LB into birdwatching now, Hunk Tears.
Hi. I didn't know you were going to read my Twitter bio to me.
Yeah, I mean, everyone always like writes a Twitter bio, but they never, you know, no one ever thinks it's going to be read out loud by anyone. But
you ignored Little Bitch.
Ignore Little Bitch and Leftist.
Yeah. Those are like one can assume.
Sure. Yeah. You know? I mean, I think you're online. So
yeah.
One or both. Right.
Yeah.
What does recovering bad vibes baby mean?
Okay. So, you know, the bad vibes baby.
Like tweet. The what if the kid had bad vibes?
Yeah.
I do. So the tweet is like, oh, people are always like down on guys who leave their kids, but like what if he had a good reason? Like what if the kid had bad vibes?
Right? Which I love. That's like
it's
an
very good. It's an all-time. It's a top 10 for me.
And for a while I think I said something about like my vibes being good in the bio, and I was like, this is disingenuous, I think. Like, I'm not there yet. I'm like aspiring to have better vibes, but my vibes are often very like toxic and cursed in like fun, cute ways, I think. But yeah, I'm in recovery. I'm like,
I don't think you have bad vibes.
Thank you.
I think you have pretty good vibes.
Thank you.
Is this part of
my internal vibes are bad though?
Maybe that's yeah. What yeah, that's different. That is harder. Yeah. I have kind of a, yeah, I think my vibes are, I need a vibe like adjustment, you know?
Yeah, I think your vibes, the thing is like how we can't really tell about of our, we can't tell our own vibes. Like you can't smell yourself.
Well.
Or maybe it's like, it is like you can't smell yourself because you can't smell yourself until you start smelling really, really, really bad.
That's true.
And like you can't sense your own vibes until your vibes get really, really bad.
See, I can tell that my vibes are bad. So like they must be really bad because I'm just like, oh, I can tell that like, when I'm having a conversation with someone, my like psychic, I have like an aura of psychic damage that is like spreading out from me.
That.
No,
okay. I talk to you very frequently.
I mean, in a professional context, so I sort of have to keep it under wraps and not talk about all of the really depressing stuff that's going on in my head constantly.
I don't think having depressing stuff going on in your head though, like, cause there are so many people who I think are really happy and they have like toxic, horrible, carcinogenic vibes.
That's true.
Like, I don't think it's a one-to-one. There can definitely be a correlation, but yeah, I think it's one of those things where you can't tell about yourself. You need someone else to,
yeah, you need
to look at it.
You need to get your vibe checked. Yeah. You need a vibe check. It's funny we're talking about vibes because that term means something now that I feel like it didn't like 10 years ago or like 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. Because like there used to be this, I feel like there was this like weird, like woo sense attached to it. Like, oh, there's really good vibrations in here. Or like, oh, you've got really bad vibes, man. And like, it was like this sort of almost like mystical thing. Yeah. I don't know. Do those people still talk about like vibrations?
They talk about vibrations.
But yeah, not
they
vibes.
Talk about like, yeah, like I don't know. I'm kind of fascinated with a lot of those people. Like I've dabbled in new agey stuff and woo woo stuff kind of throughout my life. I'm kind of on an off again moment right now. But yeah, talking about like needing to be on your highest vibration. We need to be on higher vibrations. That's a big thing people talk about, and like how to vibrate in a higher, how to exist on a higher vibration.
Mm-hmm.
I remember I was looking up how to astral project before the pandemic started. What did I? Oh, I wanted to. Me and my friend Ariana Lenarski, who's great and does a lot of really good NBA tarot, like one of the like the better woo woo content people on the computer. We were talking about going to the 311 concert that happens every March 11th.
Right, right.
But we didn't actually want to go there in person because it sounds very stressful to like be around that many 311 fans. So we were going to like, we're going to learn to astral project so we can astral project there. And then if we don't like it, we can peace out. So I was researching how to do astral projection. And it's a lot of stuff about like, you need to get yourself like operating at the highest possible vibration for you. Otherwise you can't do it. It's really, really, really hard. It's very, very advanced. And like, you're really not supposed to jump right to it. You need to have a, like a meditation practice and all. And then like, there's all this shit about how to exist on that, on the high vibrations. And that's where you get into people like putting in their own different things. And that's, so like vegetarianism has been a pretty frequent one. Like since I think the hippie moment, right?
Like, I mean, I think probably for even longer, I think there are definitely like religious traditions of like, you know, there are certain behaviors that like mar you in some way or that like get you further from perfection or whatever. And I think in some of them, eating meat or certain kinds of animals is part of that. Yeah.
So that's, it gets a little complicated there and it gets messier there because the history of like asceticism and how that operates is, I think, really different than the way we think about it in like kind of specifically like United States 20th century versions of spiritualism, which are really focused on like self-actualization in ways and like my own purity, my own vibrations, my own personal connections to divinity or space or my past lives. As opposed to like how that operated in kind of more traditional ascetic, like you didn't have, I mean, maybe you had nuns and stuff, like crazy medieval nuns being very focused on their own human potential. I don't know, but it seems kind of unlikely to me. It seems like a later, like post-Protestant, like very American thing to happen. Does that make sense? Does that track?
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, there is, I'm certainly not a subject matter expert in this at all, but yeah, there is like a peculiarly American tradition of like spiritualism and religion. And, you know, sometimes it's more plugged into Christianity and it's about like personal revelation. And then sometimes it's less tied into Christianity and more about just like mysticism and like a pastiche of stuff that has been sort of, you know, rolled together from various sources into just like this vague kind of spiritualism. And yeah, like a lot of that I think is about the self and like, you know, becoming the your best self or your like your truest self. But then you do have this current later on too, I think, in the 70s when people, when some of those people were starting to realize like, or come to the conclusion that like, oh, there is no self. There is no like truer self through a combination of like drugs and, you know, like social science and experiences and all this stuff that I think like sort of propped up too.
Yeah, I think, I guess that I forget about that stuff because it isn't like, it's not on Starseed TikTok. The exposure I have to most of this is so like cursed bottom of the, like scraping the horrible barrel, like scam artists, grifters, weird UFO cults.
I love that.
And yeah, that's all grifts. And that's all like kind of capitalizing on individual anxieties. But yeah, so I do forget about like actual cool things that people do. And like,
yeah, I mean, hippies did some cool shit.
Yeah, they did.
We've just so thoroughly come to ridicule them, I think, in the intervening era. And I think there's like a very good reason for that, right?
Yeah.
It's like they were people who were doing stuff that was like, you know, the ways that you trip, like that you make certain practices or like behaviors or whatever go away is you either like make them illegal or you treat them as like totally juvenile. And like,
right,
like that's what happened basically to like psychedelic drug use in this country.
Yeah. Even though, I mean, I don't do psychedelics. I've never done psychedelics. I'm probably never going to, because I have a very tentative hold on like my own brain, and I like it. I have it kind of almost where I have it as close to where I like it as I've ever gotten it. I don't want to take any chances. I've always, and that's kind of that's where real. I've been at. But like when I was in high school, I did a lot of acid babysitting. Like I was the like sober trip friend very frequently, because all my friends were super into psychedelics. So I've never like been on that journey, but I've watched other people like have, and like, I guess hopefully helped facilitate some like pretty good experiences with that. And yeah, I think, I don't know. Do you think it's still like super ridiculed, like in general?
I think
it didn't feel that way to me at the time.
Well, but the thing is also, I think you were like probably in like a very cool group of people. Because for people even to be doing LSD, I mean, it's not like a tiny number of people that do psychedelics, but like it isn't anywhere near, obviously, the number of people who do, you know, who smoke tobacco or even weed or drink alcohol. And that started to change too. There's like this weird movement to like rehabilitate this stuff. And that kind of ties into what you're talking about with grifters, because I feel like a new genre of grifter, like in the last 5 to 10 years, is like use psychedelics to unlock your potential as like a capital C creative or like entrepreneur or whatever, right? Because like Michael Pollan wrote that book, How to Change Your Mind, a few years ago. And I think since then, and like with like some relaxed legalization, for the most part, all this stuff is still illegal, but there are ways to like grow mushrooms or to like make DMT that are pretty easy. There has been like this renewed interest in this stuff. And like with that, obviously has come this like kind of person who is like, I'm a new kind of guru who like will like, you know, writes listicles about your first mushroom experience and stuff like that.
I'm trying to think about like when I first started seeing some of that. And I think part of it is there's like a regional discrepancy here where like where I grew up in Southern California, that kind of grifter has pretty much always been
around. Yeah. That's like the birthplace of that kind of grifter.
Yeah. I mean, and that's true for so much of like the woo-woo, like new age bullshit and good shit that is kind of permeated larger popular culture, like globally at this point. Is a lot like anti-vax. I remember anti-vax. I remember 90s anti-vax, you know, like just dudes coming up to my mom and talking to her about raw foods and like antibiotics and being like, I see you have a kid, like you better not be pumping your kid with all these chemicals the government macro wants you to stuff. Put in your kid.
Yeah.
Like you, oh my God, there was this one guy who came up to us. I was maybe 9 and we were at the mailbox store to ship some stuff. And this dude, it's like middle-aged dude comes up to my mom. starts talking about raw foods. It's like, I only eat raw foods, only eating raw foods for you. Complete stranger. Like, look at my skin.
Oh my God. Look at it.
Look at how it glistens. My organs are supple.
What?
It was like a Thursday.
Oh my God.
Like a Thursday at the mailbox. And this dude is just like a complete stranger come up to my mom to just like tell her about his lifestyle. And I feel like that's one thing I actually really miss. I really missed during the pandemic and really missed during my various shut-in periods of life. It's like, I haven't been approached by a weirdo in so long.
Mm.
It used to be I would just be out and somebody would be like, hey, do you want to hear a prophecy? Like, yeah, I do.
Yeah, of course I do.
Or like, what's your, or somebody be like, what's your heritage? Like, what's your spiritual genetics?
Mm.
Wow, ma'am, you're dressed like an American flag. I really don't want to do my algebra homework. Let's talk. Uh-huh. So like that kind of just, but I'm trying to think back to like specifically psychedelic grifters and psychedelic guru grifters. I feel like that's been here, but they didn't like take off until they started doing more of the like entrepreneurial stuff.
Because
I guess it like drugs and stuff, like trendy drugs happen in cycles, right?
Right.
And the idea of psychedelics as something to help you with your creativity was very out here when I was younger, and does seem to be like a more recent, like 5-10 years thing. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Thinking about like people talking about going to DMT parties and shit. Like that's
all. Oh my God.
The last 5 years.
Yeah.
Can you imagine a DMT party?
That sounds horrible. I mean, I remember
see a celebrity while I'm having that moment. Like, what's like? Weren't you on Law and Order? Oh my God,
Mariska Hargitay. Yeah. I remember DMT. Like the first time I ever heard about DMT was on Twitter, like 10 years ago, when it became like a really funny meme joke, mm-hmm. like a meme drug to be like. I don't know. It was like in the weird Twitter era when like people were starting to migrate from Something Awful and similar sites. And like some of these big accounts were starting to get established, like Drill. Mm-hmm. And DMT just became like a very funny thing because I think a lot of people didn't really know even what it was. And it was tied, you know, to the whole like spirit. It was like the spirit molecule. It's like your brain creates it when you die. So I just remember seeing a lot of tweets about it. I didn't even really know what it was until like a year ago.
I think I remember suddenly hearing a lot more about it like about 10 years ago. And it was because the whole conversation about 2012. Like, remember that?
Oh my God, yeah.
Okay, that was happening.
I didn't realize, like I had heard about that obviously like in the run up to that. But I didn't realize until pretty recently that was a Terrence McKenna joint.
No shit.
Yeah. That was him. And, you know, a lot of other people. But, like, he was a huge part of that because he had his whole time wave thing. I don't know how much you know about him.
I don't know much about him.
So I think in many ways he was a very cool dude. But I think he's one of those people who, like, got too hooked into, like, one of his own weirdo ideas and just mm-hmm. became obsessed with it because he was big on DMT. He was, like, huge DMT guy. DMT more or less in the United States, but then he became obsessed with this idea of the time wave. Like it had something to do with novelty theory, which is like, oh, more and more like novel events are happening as time goes on. And eventually it was basically like what's it called in transhumanism when they're like, oh, the singularity.
Okay, yeah.
It's kind of like that. It's like, yeah, things will just get so weird that, you know, 2012 will be the end of the world, but not in like the sense of like fire and brimstone, more in the sense of like, we'll all ascend to some kind of mm-hmm. new plane.
Yeah, that was the thing. And yeah, I'm like, just Googled him. I'm like, oh, this dude's face. I remember seeing this dude's face in a lot of 2012 videos about how we all need to start doing DMT to prepare for 2012 so we can like get on a higher vibrational frequency and be prepared for the singularity. Yeah. Then I don't feel like we're on a higher vibrational plane now.
No, me neither.
Sorry. Sorry, Terrence.
I'm sorry, Terrence, but also like, come on, dude.
Yeah,
there was, again, yeah, he had some really fun and interesting ideas. God, there's a, you can watch a video of him giving a talk. It must have been like one of the last talks he did before he died, because he died in 2000, but it's like late 90s, I think, and he's just talking about what the internet is going to be like, and it's just wild to see someone like talking about, oh yeah, we'll connect to each other in ways we've never imagined. And I guess in a sense that is true. We just, you know, take it for granted at this point. Mm-hmm. And B, it's horrible because it's been taken over by corporations.
Yeah. It's weird. I feel like, was there like I guess everyone has like a different sweet spot for like when the best time online was.
Yeah, what's yours?
No. That's why I was at. I'm trying to think about it. Like, I guess they just all have different, very different flavors for me. Like yeah. The early 2000s of like making my own websites and looking at other people's websites and linking to each other's websites. That was really cool. But also like early Twitter was great. Or like middle yeah. Twitter.
Yeah.
I met so many, I met you and like all yeah. of my friends through there. So yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
I never really did the forums thing. I never really did it. I kind of dabbled, so I don't have that sense of nostalgia about it, or 4chan or anything.
Yeah. I mean, people idealize them now, I think.
Yeah.
There was something to having smaller communities of people, and yeah, I mean, you can use Discord for that now, and forums still exist, but like,
yeah,
it's just not really the same thing. Yeah, I was on like, I feel like the forum I spent the most time on for a long time was the forum for this guy's personal website, who was like a fan fiction writer slash like tabletop RPG designer slash just like anime person. Cool. And just had his own website where he hosted all his stuff, and then had forums where people would just like talk about, you know, like whatever. And I found it actually like last year on the Internet Archive, and I found some of my posts from around then, and I was like, this is weird.
I'm very, not very to see weird.
I actually do kind of regret that I've lost some of that stuff, because like, you know, I had huge like RP logs. And I had like huge like you know, just like MSN Messenger logs from when I was in like middle school. But the computer that they were on is like, you know, it's long since gone. And this is before I thought about backups or anything like that.
Yeah.
This is before most people did, I think. And now I'm like, oh, I would love to be able to see that stuff. I'm sure I would cringe so much, but like, I don't know. It's gone, you know, like tears and rain.
Yeah. I saved a lot of AIM conversations, but they were always fights.
Oh.
So, like, I don't want those.
See, that's something I don't miss, is fighting.
Yeah.
I don't really fight online anymore. And I did up until fairly recently. Mm-hmm. And, it's, because that is something that I associate with, like, early Twitter as well, is just people not really knowing how to deal with any of this stuff. And just these, like, just deranged, knockdown, blowout kind of.
People still do it.
They do. I think I've just moved away from those people.
Yeah. I mean, part of it's just growing up, right? Like, your brain stops cooking and is done.
Yeah.
It's like, it's grown up. Your brain's grown up. It doesn't want to fight anymore. Like, our brains, I think, are finished developing at 25. Especially like the part of our brain that does impulse control.
Right.
So technically, like, our brains are still adolescent through our early 20s, for the most part. Everyone's a little different, right? But, like, so, yeah, you really do chill out a lot. Like, I'm about to be 32, and I feel like I chilled out so much when I turned 30.
Yeah.
Like, the idea of fighting somebody, like June 2019 versus August 2019, very different.
Uh-huh.
Just, I don't know, it feels stupid. I don't want to. I never really wanted to, but.
I don't know. Getting into fights or getting mad at people was always one of those things that, like, made you feel really good in the moment, or not even good, but, like, hyped up, you know?
I felt right, like righteous fury.
Righteous fury, but then that really quickly evaporates into, like, this, like, dread and shame and, like, regret.
Yeah.
Which is when I realized that is when I decided to try and stop doing it. And not that I'm, like, a saint and, like, don't get mad at people or, like, don't sometimes, you know, lower myself a little bit to dunk on someone. But for the most part, I'm just like, I don't, maybe I've seen too much at this point. Maybe I'm just getting old and I'm like, I don't have that fire anymore. But
I mean, I just have impulse control now.
Yeah. I don't think it was serving any, it's not like it was serving any purpose before, like getting righteously mad at people. Like, it wasn't helping me. It wasn't improving my life. It wasn't changing their opinions. It was, I don't know, not useful.
Yeah. I don't know. I feel like part of my, I'm going to sound really woo-woo here, but, like, part of my life journey, I think, for my whole life, or at least for a long period of my life, is going to be figuring out how angry to be.
Oh, yeah.
Because, like, I can't be not angry. Because there's so much shit in the world that's, like, infuriating.
Sure.
And I'm really galvanized by that to an extent. But it can't be the only thing motivating me, right? And I can't overdo, like, once I literally threw out my back because I was so, just because I was mad. I was so mad and so tense. I, like, pushed a door and moved wrong and, like, pulled a muscle in my lower back and was in excruciating pain for several days. I was, like, 22. That's too mad. I can't be that mad. That's too mad. But also, like, I can't be complacent either. There's, like, has to be a sweet spot. I don't know. There needs to be, like, how mad can I get? I need to let things affect me. I can't, like, harden my heart to the world. But at the same time, I can't throw out my back because I'm just, like, physically internalizing it. Because that doesn't help anyone. That doesn't serve any purpose. I can't.
No,
that does nothing.
Surely, there's got to be a middle way.
Yeah.
Between those two things. The answer lies somewhere in the middle, you know? No, you can't just have anger because
you need some.
At least I
need some.
It can be useful, I think, insofar as it spurs you to do something useful.
Yeah, but also I think that, like, this idea that every emotion we have has to be a useful emotion is maybe not the healthiest. Because, like, we're going to have useless emotions, and I can't, like, prune my emotions to be these things that are, like, a perfectly efficient machine. I'm going to have a lot of extraneous feelings, and they're going to be stupid.
Yeah.
And I'm going to cry over stupid shit, and that's just it. That's just, like, part of my life. Like, I cried at Avengers Endgame. And I knew it was stupid as it was happening.
I'm sure you're far from the only person who did that.
As the tears fell down my face, I was angry. I'm like, I can't believe this is happening.
Yeah, Tony Stark is going away.
He went away. I was so sad. And I'm like, this is so stupid. I'm being manipulated. I'm being fucked with. Like, I hate this. I hate that I'm having this emotional response.
Knowing that consciously doesn't prevent that from still happening, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'll cry. I cried at a gum commercial once. Like, well, not, I wasn't like, I was completely sober. I was in no dramatic point in my hormonal cycle. I just fully, truly cried at a gum commercial.
Wow.
I'm a sensitive person.
Good commercial. Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with that. I don't think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think for me, yeah, like it's not about like pruning your emotions or whatever. I guess for me, it's been about thinking about like what behaviors am I doing that are like leading to these, and like what's feeding these and what's not. And if I want to be feeling this, then like, let's just feel it. And if I don't, then like, oftentimes there are behaviors that I can do that will, you know, lessen it or whatever. So it's, yeah, it's like, what do you feed? What do you starve?
Right. That makes sense.
But yeah, I have like a tendency, crying at a gum commercial is like not hurting anyone, right? Like,
no, it's not. It's just fine. Embarrassing. It's just really cringe. I have a tendency to want to make myself like perfectly efficient.
Mm.
And I get really mad and resentful when I'm not a perfect machine. And I'm a, like, yeah. if I'm a very imperfect machine. That's like, that's not going to happen for me. like becoming like efficiency. That's not going to happen for me. I strained my eyes playing Pokemon Snap yesterday and had to collapse on a sofa dramatically for an hour. I'm never going to be efficient.
That's, you need a fainting couch.
I literally have a velvet, like, we have a sofa and we wanted velvet for like, because it looks nice and it's soft, but also like, it is more satisfying to collapse dramatically on a sofa that's like a fancy fabric.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Maybe one day I'll have a fainting couch.
They're good. Wow. They are good. I don't know. I think there should be more furniture dedicated to fainting.
Or
strong emotions. Oh, this is my rage chair. This is where I go and sit in rage and just sort of like stare out the window.
More dramatic furniture. More furniture dramatic furniture. For dramatic moments.
I feel like we have lost, like, I don't know. I think something that attracts me to, like, you know, really arch characters in media is just that, like, there is this drama to them that I feel like can almost sometimes, like, defang some of these things. Whereas, like, in real life, in current, you know, modern U.S. mainstream, we just sort of, like, go through drab offices or, like, live in, like, our tastefully decorated West Elm apartments or whatever, or IKEA apartments, and don't, you know, do these like dramatic, like feel feelings in like this kind of like dramatic way. It's just like, oh, I'm just gonna like suffer in my shitty box of an apartment, and like that feel when no like castle turret to like brood on, you know?
Right. I mean, you can make a box apartment work.
Oh, like, no. Yeah, you can. You can. I just feel like it's like the encouragement is towards this really bland kind of aesthetic.
Right. And I'm also thinking of like, have you seen The Bitter Tears of Petra von Kant?
No.
Oh, it's wonderful. It's a Fassbender movie based on a play that I think he wrote, but he used to direct it. It's just like women in an apartment having a terrible time. And the apartment is insane and it's full of mannequins because the main character is a fashion designer. And, but the, like the final scene happens in this room with no furniture in it. It's just this like, wallpaper of like a Renaissance painting or a Baroque painting, a shag carpet and a telephone. And like, that's a really good space for it to be dramatic in. And everyone has to sit on the floor while this woman's just like hysterical. It's wonderful. It's such a good movie.
That sounds good.
Yeah. But yeah. Spaces to be dramatic in. Furniture to be dramatic on.
I
feel like the fainting couch is like the only one, right?
I mean, there's a fainting couch. There's like sitting in a big leather chair near a fireplace, like a Poe character.
Mm.
there's also clothing to be dramatic in, right? Like a smoking jacket or like a gown or like whatever.
Yeah, I've been watching a lot of Wuxia, and like flipping really like billowy sleeves is a great dramatic gesture.
Oh, yeah.
Like, when you flip your sleeves, it's great. I like it, really excited whenever a character does that. Mm-hmm. That's good. Stomping upstairs. It's great. Slamming doors.
It's funny, like a lot of not a lot, but some of the things that we used to be able to do. Like, you used to be able to slam a phone.
Yeah, you can't do that anymore.
You can't do that
anymore. And you can't even clip it shut dramatically.
You can't even clip it shut dramatically. If you slam your phone down, you're going to smash your phone. And, like, the best you can do is, like, ugh. Like, close a Zoom call with my thumb. Like, ugh. And it's, like, not the same.
It's so
shitty. That gesture has been taken from us.
So have slamming doors. Because we all live in these fucking open concept spaces. Or work in open concept spaces. There's no rooms anymore. So we can't slam doors.
God.
There's no stairs to stomp on.
We all miss rooms. We all miss stairs.
I miss rooms.
Except the Daleks. Oh. They don't really miss stairs.
My parents briefly lived in a house that had doors in the kitchen. It was...
Wow.
Amazing.
That's so strange. I don't think I've ever... That's probably not true. I'm sure I have been in a kitchen that is like a separate room, but...
But like it still had its doors on. Because I've been in a lot of ones where like there was once a door in like the 20s and it was built and somebody was we can't have this. Let's tear it out. Let's tear out this wall. Open. But like you could just go in the kitchen and be in a room by yourself. Mm. Separate from the rest of the house. It was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I like... After a year of... Because I mean, I have a fake email job. I am an at-risk, you know, individual.
Fake email job?
That's like the
two term. Genres of jobs there are, right?
Yeah, the new genres are fake email job and like fake service job. Those are the two kinds of jobs you can have. So I have had like, I've been very much on lockdown until I got vaccinated. And like the way my building is, I was really barely able to go outside at all, even for like a walk. Which was very frustrating. So it's hard for me to be like, oh, I love being alone in a room. Because I've been alone in a room a lot. But I do love being alone in a room. There's something great about being alone in a room.
There is.
Just maybe not right now. We need a break.
Right now, I miss being alone around other people. I realized I walked past like a crush of people on the street the other day because people are starting to congregate outside restaurants and things again because it's... Mm-hmm. Partly because they're getting vaccine, but also partly just because it's getting warmer and people just don't really care. And I realized how much I missed the smell of other people's perfume because I walked past someone and I was just like, oh my God. Like, because I'm really into perfume and like, you know, I have many, many samples that I just tend to rotate through, but on someone else, it's just like, oh my God. Like, this whole sense of like being near to someone, like it's the closest you can get to someone without actually touching them, right? Is smelling them. And I was like, oh my God, I miss that so much of just like, not even in like a sexual way or anything, just like that kind of primal closeness to other people in almost like a primate kind of way of just like, I need to be in like a community. In the sense of just being around other creatures like me.
Yeah. No, a sense of like, I went for a really good walk last night. And it was like one of the first times I really felt in like a good, joyful way that I like exist in a world with other people. Mm. And that's like, it just like, I haven't gotten close enough to anyone to smell them yet. I'm very excited for that to happen. I'm a new thing to look forward to. Mm-hmm. Because that is such like a thing that I took for granted and actually was very annoyed by very frequently.
Oh, sure. Oftentimes
it's not a good perfume.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
But like I was walking home and I'm on the sidewalk in a residential area. It's nighttime. And the sprinklers started going off. And that's like such a... That's a thing that used to happen to me every day.
Yeah.
That I hated because it would get me
wet. Get wet.
And it would always happen right when you take a step. It's like it was waiting for you. for the sprinklers to go off. Mm-hmm. Like they knew, and just to get you wet. It's like an annoying thing. Like the bus coming right when you light a cigarette. Just like, ugh, oh, this always happens like this. It hadn't happened to me in over a year, and I almost cried with joy. For reasons I can't quite explain, but like, it felt just good. I don't know. I'm also watching two guys smoke in the alley and look at their phones. They look like they're having a great time. And that makes me really happy. But I want to be that person soon. Yeah. I want to be the person somebody looks at and says, hey, they look like they're chilling. They look like they're having fun.
Yeah. You want to be where the people are.
Be where the people are.
Walking around on their, what do they call them?
That is one nice thing, though, about New York, is that, like, you are in a place with other people.
Oh, yeah. You can't avoid it, which sometimes is really stressful.
Yeah.
Like, it's the opposite problem. Like, I went for a walk the other night and was like, I don't really want to walk past anyone. Like, definitely there are parts of the city that is totally possible. There's a lot of Brooklyn, a lot of Queens that you could do that in. But, like, I'm in a fairly densely populated part of Brooklyn. And I was like, I am going to definitely be, even if I go on side streets, I am going to walk past people. And that is just how it is. And I just have to deal with that.
Yeah.
But sometimes that's also really nice, right? Like, being out, the first couple of times I was like out in the evening when it was warmer this year, it's been like, oh my God, right. There's like life. People exist. Everyone's like doing their thing and like out. And that felt really good.
I live in a very densely populated area where everyone drives cars
and right. walks around. Yeah. Yeah.
It's very weird. I'm jealous of you. I want to be able to, like, even though I remember living in a very densely populated area where I couldn't take two steps without seeing somebody outside. Mm-hmm. And I hated that. It was very annoying. But I also really miss it.
It's, you know, the dream is to live in one or the other and then just have like a magic door that takes you to like a completely abandoned part of the city or to like a forest or something.
Yeah. I looked in someone's window last night and they had like a tiny framed Mona Lisa in their kitchen.
Maybe they bought the NFT.
It just felt very good. No, I could tell it was a pre-NFT purchase.
Wow.
It was a very nice frame. And I don't know. Like, I keep on having moments like that that are like, that's not anything. That's not a story. That's just a thing that I experienced and it felt really good. Because it's not me being in my room anymore.
Yeah. That's, I mean, it's a little experience that like, when it's absent, like having it is really noticeable.
Yeah. But I do feel like I'm worrying. I'm like going to find myself getting into having a little mini era here where I'm just like getting incredibly sentimental and thinking every single tiny thing that happens to me is the most poignant thing in the world. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to look back and be like, dude, what are you doing? What were you doing? What were you thinking?
Yeah. I feel that way sometimes. And I think there are certain like states or like behaviors that can like enhance that too. Like weed, obviously people talk about how everything, they're just like, oh, whoa, man. But like, I never really have that experience on weed. I don't have the like profundity kind of experience. I do have it on dissociatives. I get this sense that like that I'm tapping into something and everything that I'm experiencing is super meaningful and I need to like take notes and stuff. And like, that isn't the case for me. Maybe it is for other people, but like, I feel like it is kind of like a temporary, like schizoid break of just like, oh, everything is like telling me something.
everything is speaking to me on a very deep level. And then afterwards, it's just like, why did I think that? Why did I think that these Wikipedia articles were like written just so that I would read them at this time and they would lead me to like something else?
I've never felt that way.
It's very strange.
I have felt like on Weed, I do tend to feel like this is amazing. Mm-hmm. Like this thing is amazing. This song is amazing. This experience is amazing, but I don't want to like tell anybody about it.
Sure.
I have no, it doesn't feel intelligent. Oh, hell yeah. Hawk. Hawk just flew by. Whoa. That was cool as hell. Yes.
Wow.
But yeah, it's that. Like, it's just that.
It's that. It's like, oh my God, like, a hawk.
Oh, this is a really cool thing that's happening. And it's not interesting in any way to anyone other than me. And not really interesting to me outside of the moment where it's happening.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's one thing I like about Weed is that I feel no pressure to be smart. No pressure mm-hmm. to be like meaningful or come up with anything. I just am like enjoying these stupid things as they happen to me. And then I forget them.
Yeah.
No,
go ahead.
I used to go to a lot of concerts, like stoned out of my mind. And like mm-hmm. I've read whole books. Like I used to be like pretty stonery. Like and mm-hmm. I've always had a pretty low tolerance. So I would be like completely out of my mind on weed. Uh-huh. And like I've read whole books. I've been to concerts that I just have no memory of. But I know that I really enjoyed it at the time. And I don't know. That feels good to me. It feels good to not keep it all.
Yeah, sure.
Like, that was a gift for that me. Only that me. And not this me. And that's okay.
I mean, it's still kind of a gift for this you because you remember that it was, you don't remember it, but you remember it being enjoyable.
Yeah.
So there's still that. I don't know. I think about this sometimes. This like, I feel like this is very like sophomore weed kind of stuff. But like that whole question of like a sense of self of like, well, if I don't even recognize what I was doing like 10 years ago as like my actions, or like if I can't even like conceive of what was going through my brain, like am I the same person? And like if not, then what happened to that person? And like, you know, that's going to happen to me too, right? Someone else will replace who I am right now. And ultimately there won't be a me one day. So yeah. It's like, yeah, I don't know. Like the stuff around the self of like, is there like, is it really important to have this like continuity of experiences and stuff? And I'm like, I don't know. And maybe it isn't, but that is like kind of scary.
I mean, this kind of like gets into what we were talking about in the very beginning about like TikTok people and their vibes and like, I don't know, starseed shit and like, oh, I am not only have I always been this me, I've been this me on another planet and I came here on purpose to save the world. Or like, I mean, I think that that's a question that like people are really intrigued by and people are vexed by. And that's why there's so much like stuff about it and stuff about like, who was I before I was this and who will I be after I'm this?
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know.
I feel like a lot of that is partly because of like where a lot of people find themselves in like economic and social terms. Like yeah. Young and young-ish people in the US are like in a world where the idea of like a stable career with like advancement opportunities and stuff pretty much does not exist anymore. Yeah. Where like religious institutions and like similar groups aren't really a dominant factor in life anymore. And like, not that isn't to say any of these things are like are good or bad. It's just like,
right,
that is the state of the world. And so like, when you're really atomized and you're like, well, I'm not like a Christian, or I'm not like a farmer, or, you know, like whatever, you sort of have all of this like space that's like, well, what am I? And like, there's like a lot of like insecurity and like doubt. And I feel like that's kind of partly why you see this profusion of like identities online.
That makes a lot of sense.
Because it's like people trying to pin down like, okay, well, I am this type of person with this, this, and this. And like, the closer I can get, like eventually I will be able to fully map myself.
Yeah. That's
because no one else is going to do it for me. So I have to.
Right. I mean, I'm not that generation, but I remember finding that thinking like very seductive.
Yeah, it is.
At points.
No, me too. Like, just need to find the right words for myself, or like,
yeah,
have someone explain to me.
And, I'm going to learn astrology really, right, really a lot.
Right, right. Yeah, astrology is so interesting in that regard, because it is kind of that, right? It's like, oh, you are a sign. That's like your group, and like, this will tell you about yourself and you can learn more about it. But like, I think astrology is really cool for a reason that I don't see people talk about very often, which is that like, it puts you into a place where you are thinking at least a little about the universe and like your place in it, and like, mm-hmm, how these unimaginably large and like long things have affected your life.
Yeah.
Even if it's not in a literal way, I still think that's really cool, because like, we're like part of the universe, right? We didn't like, we're not alien to it, or we came out of it. And thinking about your sign is like kind of a way of remembering that.
It can be. I mean, when I was very into astrology for a while. Like, I learned it. Like, I can do, mm-hmm, natal charts. And that is what I liked about it. I liked that sense. I've always liked that sense of like, I don't know. I mean, when I was 6 and I asked my dad, like, why don't I go to Sunday school? He just gave me Cosmos. Like, that was my spiritual, like, that was the beginning of my spiritual education. So, like, that's always been.
Wow.
Yeah. Thank you, cool parents.
Damn. When I asked my parents,
I didn't understand
a
fucking thing, though. I was 6.
Yeah. No, I mean.
Like, that wow. Yeah. Reasonable, Larry.
Right.
Cool. Like, come on, cool effort, though.
I feel like when I was young and asked my parents that, I didn't really get a real answer. And like, I started going to a church youth group when I was very young, when a very religious kid moved in across the street from me. Mm-hmm. And I went a few times and then realized I hated like being told what to do and like being part of a group.
Yeah.
And I left, but like, my parents were always very like, well, if that's what you want to do. And like, I've never really met anyone else who had that kind of experience, or just like not, religion was like very much like not forced on me, to the point that like, when I encountered things like experiences with it in my, like as an adult, I was like, oh my God, I wish I'd had this. Like certain things, right?
Yeah.
Like the first Seder I went to, I was like, oh my God, this is incredible. Like, this is like amazing.
Yeah.
Like, I wish I had had some kind of community when I was
a kid. So here's the thing about Seders, right?
It's specifically like,
they're great,
the fun
when
thing,
they're
right?
Other people's Seders.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Your family Seders are always terrible.
Of course.
But other people's family Seders are the best.
That makes sense.
I don't know why this is.
I mean,
but it is a law of the universe.
You're not like with your family, which can be stressful, you know?
Yeah.
I could see that. Yeah. And then, yeah, actually after that, for a while, I was like briefly like reading a lot about Judaism, and was like, would I ever want to convert to Judaism? And the answer I basically came to was no, because it doesn't seem like, for me, and I don't want to like, whatever, obviously people convert all the time. And like, it is, has been a part of that religion for, since its beginnings, basically. But like, it didn't feel like something that I needed to do to like, you know, I guess, yeah, it doesn't feel like something I needed to do when I could just sort of like experience like a lot of these things in like support of, or like in community with people who were doing them. And then also just like reading stuff without necessarily being like, okay, and this is going to like, I'm going to sign on to the covenant now. Like,
yeah. I mean, you've already been to grad school and you finished with Dark Souls. Right. So like, it's basically this, I mean, it's like,
I don't need another covenant. I already joined a bunch of them. I joined the Rat King in Dark Souls. He'll be so mad at me if I join the Lord's Covenant, if I join Adonai's Covenant.
I don't know why people would want to convert. I mean, I get why, but I also am like, you're literally opting for, like,
within you're opting the, into hardship, yeah.
Yeah, you're opting into hard mode. Like, you don't need to play. You're all, like, you get to play on easy. Play on easy.
Right. Do you, like,
you have, like, very few rules.
My understanding is that within a lot of Judaism, like, Gentiles are basically, like, if you act decently according to, like, this much, much smaller list of rules, like, you're good. Like, you don't need to, like, deal with, like, this, like, thousands of years of history of, like, you know, debate and everything. And maybe if you want to do that, then that's, you know, up to
well,
you,
no, if you want to, you still can't.
You still can't. No, I mean, if I you mean, convert.
Like, unless someone's really nice and wants to talk to you. But like, you know, you don't get to. But I mean, like, most people don't. Most, like, half.
Right.
In that thinking, at least half of the Jews don't get to do that either.
So, yeah, like, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It's, I almost became a rabbi. No, it's not true. I almost started pursuing the path to become a rabbi.
Wow. I didn't know that about you. Mm-hmm. I think you'd be a very cool rabbi. It's a lot of school.
So much. Like, I can't finish undergrad. I can't become a rabbi.
There's a lot. Yeah.
It's too much. It's simply too much, which sucks because, like, my terrible cousins who I don't like, they're all technically rabbis because they're all Orthodox boys. So they all, like, finished yeshiva.
Yeah.
Or maybe they haven't finished yet. Maybe they had to do their war crimes first. I don't know. well, they don't have to. They opted in for those.
Wow. This podcast is going to get canceled.
What? I mean, I feel like being anti-IDF is not the position it was 10 years ago.
Sure.
I feel like it's pretty widely held. When I was interested in becoming a rabbi, that was part of the reason, is that there was no Jewish community I could join here.
Mm.
And there still really isn't. That was like explicitly like, it's like a safe place or like a welcoming space for anti-Zionist Jews. And I wanted to create that, and I wanted to do kind of like interfaith stuff. And yeah, because my thing was, my parents were very similar in that I could be whatever I wanted as long as I wasn't Christian or Muslim.
Okay.
Because those are like the two religions that say like Judaism's wrong.
Right. Yeah.
So that like, but it was like, yeah, you could be a Buddhist and Jewish. You could be Wiccan and Jewish. And so yeah, they were like a similar kind of like, I don't know. It's so weird. It's so much to unpack, and I have to unpack, and this is not the place to unpack. And I have to find a place to unpack, and it's so hard because I'm in LA, and I just want to like find a place that's chill and like not gross and is at least cool with me saying that my cousins are war criminals in a joking, offhanded way. Mm-hmm. Several times a day, because I have a lot of issues, because it makes me very upset. And like, but I also don't want this weird celebrity shit or like the culty stuff.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I've mentioned this multiple times, but that Yom Kippur where Josh Gad showed up on Zoom, I don't want that. I don't want I don't want surprise celebrities. It freaks me out.
Oh my God.
It's not as bad as surprise celebrities at the DMT party. But like,
yeah. What if Josh Gad showed up at the DMT party and then you saw him start eating dirt and like launching it out of his asshole through his pants?
Josh Gad at the DMT party. I don't want that.
No, I think I would die.
Yeah. That's also why I can't do DMT. It's like, I'm too sensitive. I crack gum commercials. If I saw Josh Gad at the DMT party, I would literally perish.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, no, it does make sense. I wish I was like dumb enough to like be duped into joining a cult.
Right?
It seems like really nice.
I mean, yeah, I just like, you don't have to think about anything. Like it's just like, you know, this is what you wear. This is what you do. They've sort of, you know, you've got it all figured out and yeah. You're ascending up to like a different level by giving them more of your money. And, one day the ultimate secrets of the universe will be revealed to you. But even if they're not, you're sort of, good.
Well, you know you did the right thing.
You know you did the right thing. Yeah.
And you have a community. You have a community.
That's, I think, you have
a spiritual community. White cults. I want a spiritual community.
Right? Me too. I was looking into Zoroastrianism a while ago, but it turns out that it primarily Iranian religion. Yeah. Not a lot of
a lot.
Millennial white women in Zoroastrianism.
No.
But it's pretty cool.
It is cool, yeah.
It's a cool one. It's real old, too. So yeah. I like that in a religion. Yeah, I think it's basically just kind of circling around Buddhism and Taoism for me for the next little while. But like, it would be nice to have a community of people. But as soon as also, I have this problem where as soon as I come into some kind of community with people, I immediately recoil. And I think there are probably, you know, trauma related reasons for that. Yeah. But if in like this protective way of like, oh, I can't let myself get invested or involved because something is going to go wrong. And like, I have to hold back a part of myself. And so I really envy people who seem to be able to overcome that. And not just in religious experiences, but in like, even like things like fandoms where people can really go for something.
Yeah.
I always feel like I can't do that. It's too dangerous. And I don't know what fandom, I mean by that, but
with fandom, at least I found I've been able to like hold back like parts, like the, I like enough. I like the, I being able to hold back, like who I am, who I am in real life is enough for me to be able to feel free to go like fucking balls to the wall and say, so yeah, but I can, but like the idea of some, of going into something with everything I have and everything I am is, I don't, that's not, no.
That's scary. No. Right? Yeah. I think that's the appeal of psychedelics to me, at least a little bit, because that ability to hold that back kind of gets taken away from you, which is terrifying, but can be really productive, I think.
Cool. Yeah, no, I'm good.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I think that's totally reasonable.
Like, yeah, I'm not gonna skydive. I'm not gonna,
probably not gonna skydive either. I just feel like I would be like the one person whose shoot didn't go, you know.
I just don't, just
I'm sure it's fun.
I understand the appeal of the experience. But the everything else about the experience and everything that could go wrong with the experience is an, it's like, I'm good. I'm good. Mm. Like I get, like if I get as enough of, that's like actually also an appeal of being an incredibly sensitive person, right? If I get as big of a kick as I do out of seeing a Mona Lisa in somebody's window as I walk by on a Wednesday night or a hawk flying past my window, like I can just have these things. These are really good.
Yeah.
I don't need to jump out of a plane.
I think that's a really important thing to know about yourself, that you don't have to jump out of a plane. I mean, yeah, that's, yeah, I feel like that's really great.
I feel like I just like very much abused this podcast and made it into a therapy session for myself.
No, this is exactly what this podcast is. You did it. You
get a perfect grade. If I gave grades out for guests, which I don't because that seems rude. That seems,
yeah, don't do but, that.
But you get the only grade. So in the history of the podcast, and it's perfect marks on your podcast.
This is giving me the strength also to go back to therapy where it can go back to being the favorite.
Oh, I would love to go back to therapy. But yeah, it is very important that you be your therapist's favorite client. I love it is very favorite. Important that you entertain your therapist in my experience because you are paying to tell them jokes.
I'm paying to have them heal me, so I need to be the best one.
You're paying for a captive audience for your tight five. And they have to kind of at least politely smile at your jokes about really, 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 really dark things.
Oh, that's so true.
Yeah. So,
all the people who do their like trauma as comedy and it's very uncomfortable, they really can just do that in therapy. It's fine.
You can just take that to therapy, folks. But,
I learned a lot today.
Yeah. I think we've all learned a lot. About whether or not we need to jump out of planes, what a therapist is.
Who we'd least like to see at a DMT party. Because I hope everyone listening now, thought of their person.
The question is, who would you most like to see?
Hiroshi Tanahashi.
Wow. Okay.
That's what I'd most like to see.
Okay. That's pretty good.
That's the wrestler with the blonde hair and the really big pecs.
Yeah, I'm picturing him in that apron.
Yeah.
Making something. I think, and I don't know why I'm going to say this, but Tony Shalhoub for me.
Oh, yeah.
Just like a nice, comforting Tony Shalhoub while you're tripping. Like, how nice would that be?
That sounds great.
When Tony Shalhoub had tested positive for COVID-19 last year, he said, "We really are all monk now."
What does that mean?
I don't know.
Tony Shalhoub, come on, K-hole.
Do you want to tell people where they can find you online?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at HunkTears. You can find me on this podcast network that we're on several shows, and on fanbite.com where I write things sometimes.
Cool. Yeah. You should go check that website out. It's pretty good. And yeah, listen to our other shows too. But, I will see you all next week. And until then, I don't remember how I end this podcast. Bye.
The K-Hole is a fanbite.com production hosted by Merritt Kay. This episode was produced by Jordan Mallory and Paul Tamayo. Follow Merritt on Twitter at Merritt Kay. Follow Jordan on Twitter at Jordan_Mallory. Follow Paul on Twitter at Pauly Mayo. For more information on visit fanbite.com/podcasts or go to podcastnet.org.